will be witness to what I have discovered. May you be the jury, but your verdict will be one of self-conviction. I know what I have witnessed. Now it is your turn. Prepare yourself for a journey into a world where each new step may give you a better understanding of your own reality. Reality.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Evolver the Podcast. It's been far too long since we did that last one, but I'm excited for this episode. We got some really great interviews tonight, and there's just been a ton of stuff going on in Evolver, period. For instance, Charles Eisenstein has a new book coming out called Sacred Economics, Money, Gift, and Society in the Age of Transition, which, I mean, Evolver's putting out, but it's also become quite a theme among the Evolver community and spores all over the country, whereas in Baltimore, they've started the B-Note, and they've now got 70 stores involved in that. In Long Beach, they still have their Time Bake going strong. Gift Circles has started up in San Francisco and Pittsburgh. There's just a ton of stuff that's going on right now with trying to get a lot of momentum behind these alternative currencies and alternative economies. And we're really excited about that happening here. Plus, we have another retreat coming up in Costa Rica, the RS Plant Medicine Retreat. And there's two of those, actually. It's happening from July 1st through the 11th, and then also July 15th through the 25th. And Daniel Pinchbeck will be a co-host for the second one. And last time it was really great, and a lot of people said that they just had these really life-changing experiences going out there, and we look forward to a bunch more of those happening this next time. As well as that, we also had an Evolver Intensives course coming up again with Alberto Villalda, which is on shamanism and the importance of it. He has a book out called Power Up Your Brain, The Neuroscience of Enlightenment. And he's going to have a lecture himself, plus one-on-one conversations with John Perkins, Sandra Ingerman, Marcella Lobos, CJ Castaneda, R. Allen, Linda Fitch, and I mean, there's just going to be so much great experience and knowledge that will be shared through that course. Which brings me to the first of tonight's interviews is actually an excerpt from a past Evolver Intensive where Jeremy Narby was the host, who is the author of The Cosmic Serpent. That Evolver Intensive had interviews with Stanislav Grof, Wade Davis, Luis Eduardo Luna, and then Kat Harrison, who is actually, she's the person we have the interview with tonight and the clip from that. And it's just a really different interview, and it's got a different outlook on some things that we deal with in American culture today. And she actually talks a lot about tobacco and just kind of its sacred purpose and things like that. And it's a great interview. You can check that out and look on Evolver for more details on the rest of the Jeremy Narby Evolver Intensives, which happened a while ago. And then our second interview is with Anada Guerra, who is an energy healer, and she does workshops to help people balance it. And it's an interview mostly about empowering your language. Which was really, really interesting, good interview. So I guess without going on too much further here, let's go ahead and get into this first interview, which is Jeremy Narby interviewing Kat Harrison. Thank you.
Freedom.
Freedom. Freedom.
Freedom.
Freedom.
Freedom. We have enormous freedom. That's not a gift that was given to us. It's a legacy that was left to us by centuries of struggle, by centuries of people, most of whose names are completely forgotten. The ones who created the freedom and the rights that we now have, and that will be taken away unless you constantly defend them.
And So then it does lead one as a, let's just say, a person coming out of an industrial society with all these industrial cigarettes. And, you know, let's not go over the history of industrial cigarettes, but still, you know, in our world, tobacco has become this thing that leads to addiction, you know. So on the one hand, we have this beautiful San Pedro intelligent plant who's a protector of everybody, and then when it gets turned into an industrial product, it becomes this thing that actually kills people and also creates terrible addiction. So what's your point of view on that?
Well, I think what tobacco really offers us and demands of us is a very conscious relationship. You know, it's just as I've been saying, it's a boundary setter, and by its very nature, it challenges our boundaries. And because we collectively, outside these traditional patterns of respect, don't have that sense of boundaries, we're not trained to, we're not initiated into that, then we let it in and we don't know how to stand with it, you know. So once it's in, I mean, as they say, once you have a relationship with tobacco, you will always have it, even if you never smoke again, you know, you will always have it. Once you know tobacco and tobacco knows you, it's like meeting a powerful person. You can't unmeet them, you know. And so for the rest of your life, tobacco is in your consciousness somewhere. For so many people around the world who didn't have a spiritual or animistic explanation or context or reverence for tobacco, it just became the monkey on their back. And it's so hard to undo that relationship, to step back from it. I, too, like you, in South America, have seen all the cleansings with tobacco smoke and the, you know, creating the sacred space in which to open up the vulnerability of ceremony. You don't want to be vulnerable without protection around that vulnerability. You know, you want to be vulnerable to get the beauty and the message and the visions and the healing of these various psychedelic plants and mushrooms, but you want to do it within some kind of you know, well-guarded, watchful boundary. That's where good shamanism comes in, and it's where tobacco comes in too. And then that communication, that we know that tobacco is very grounding, and lots of us have used it, and I have had smoking tobacco relationships on and off through my life and regard it as an ally because I've been fortunate to keep it that way. But that's really a challenge for many people. So that use of it that we have when we get into a dangerous situation or we hear some very disturbing news or we've had a shock, susto of some kind, as they would call it in South America, then any of us who know tobacco might go for tobacco at that moment. I need to ground. I need to put a lid on this situation. I need to think clearly. This is an emergency. That person needs help. I want to send them energy. The way of bringing ourselves into focus in order to do a piece of work in this virtual world, tobacco is a really good tool for that. If you know how to use it then, and you don't just start sucking on it, basically, you know, and it just doesn't become like every day. And so I have had as many of us, I think, who've sought the ayahuasca experience in South America, the blessing of having tobacco smoke blown in your face and all over your head and all over your body, and, you know, the murmurings and the chantings and unbelievable amounts of smoke until it feels like you're taking a shower in tobacco smoke, you know, a never-ending shower in it. And it's wonderful. It can be absolutely wonderful, and I think really do its job that way. How we explain that scientifically, I don't know. But there are so many experiences I've had where I see how it works to help a healing, help long-distance communication, long-distance sending of energy, grounding and protecting, all those things.
Well, let's say that we have somebody who smokes 15 cigarettes of organic tobacco, you know, but still it's 15 cigarettes a day, every day. What would you advise that person on a practical level to go about modifying the relationship with the plant and how they actually consume it?
Well, I've been asked this before, and I have a couple of pieces of advice. One is to grow tobacco, if you can, even in a pot in your window. But if you grow the plant, you have another relationship with it. And it may not turn out to be an 8-foot, you know, beauty, but it's part of the way you're conversing with it then and asking it to be in right relationship to you. And some people, if you know you have it growing in your garden or on your deck, then it's like it's in your life and you're not as tied to putting it in your body. People who are trying to back away from the need, from the true addiction, the need to put it in their body all the time. But another, apart from growing it, and if you grow it, then talk to it, touch it. You know, it likes attention. It's a communicator. So it's not just something you ignore. That wouldn't be a good idea. But I think in terms of the practice of smoking, yes, for sure. You know, I recommend smoking organic tobacco and rolling it yourself and taking that time to go into the smoking experience that is a little more conscious. But still, you're right. People smoke 15 hand-rolled organic cigarettes a day. And so then what I say is try to remember that it's prayer medicine. If you pray, if you know whatever you call praying, if you go into a state of prayer, and this doesn't mean jabbering to your friends or having a beer or doing it in a, you know, concert or an alley or whatever while you're watching television. This means actually go into the kind of thought, the kind of awareness that is whatever you call prayer whenever you're smoking tobacco, then you will at least be using it for the traditional role that it has, that where it has served us so well, us humans. And it's hard to pray that much. It's hard to seriously pray for 10 minutes, 15 times a day. So you might smoke less. You might change the nature of your relationship to it if you remember this is prayer medicine, and whenever I smoke it, I need to be praying. And it makes you think about how you want things to be better and what you might be asking for, and just be more aware.
So it's not just say no, it's just say pray. Say pray.
All right, once again, that was Jeremy Narby interviewing Kat Harrison. Kat Harrison's had like a really interesting life. If you guys should really look into it a little bit more. She's worked for years and years and years in South America with the tribal shamanic cultures. She actually started a nonprofit with her former husband, Terrence McKenna, to maintain and rescue the knowledge of the shaman cultures about the sacred essence of plants. As well, she's a teacher at the California School of Herbal Studies. So you guys can go and check that out down there. And she's just, it was great to have that interview be a part of this show. And just the Evolver Intensives are just these amazing courses that have been going on. And really looking forward to this next one with Alberto and all the conversations that he's going to have with the different people on that intensive. You can check out more information about that on Evolver.net and RealitySandwich.com. I'm looking forward to it. And then this next interview is with Nada Guerra, and it just, she's an energy healer, and she does a lot of workshops and one-on-one work to help people get more balanced into a better place in their lives. She has a website, bodyintention.com, and you can also find her on Facebook. And she, this interview is mostly about her work with empowered languaging, and it just, this is something I've thought about a lot over the last 3 years, is like how much language affects our reality and our perception of it. And she really has a fresh, enlightening, informed perspective on how it actually does. And it was really great for me to hear this and just hear her work. And it's something that I just really look forward to sharing with you guys. And I think you're really, really going to enjoy. So without me talking too much more, let's go ahead and get into this interview. Nada Guerra, and it was Aaron Shaw, who's a co-coordinator from Evolver LA, that actually did this interview, and I'm glad to have her being part of this show and helping us find great interviews like this and participating in doing them. So thank you, Aaron, and thank you, Nada, for doing the episode, and here's the interview. Bye.
Greetings. Welcome to the Evolver Podcast. My name is Erin Shaw. I'm a news writer for Reality Sandwich and regional coordinator for Evolver in Los Angeles. And I'm talking today with an amazing woman who recently co-presented a workshop called Creating Reality Through Language. So here today to talk with us about conscious language, or rather integrated language, is Nada Guerra. Welcome, Nada.
Hi, Erin. Thank you so much for having me here today.
Great. Well, so your background is in a pretty wide array of therapy practices and arts. So can you tell me about what you do?
I would love to. I have been fascinated with being human for a really long time, and I entered into what one might call the dark night of my soul at a quite a young age, which then catapulted me into researching and seeking out different types of modalities and different paradigms of thought of what it is to be human, to find inner peace. And now I share it with many other people.
And so what sparked your interest in language along that path?
At a certain point in doing the work, it became obvious that language is a key component to the programming of the human system. And I began to analyze and monitor the way I spoke to myself, how that influenced the way I was feeling. And then also looking at how I was communicating with other people, the words I was using to speak and express myself, and was that allowing me to convey the ideas that I wanted to convey. I started to see how the clients that I was working with were speaking to themselves and how that was affecting how they were showing up in their lives. I became aware of it, it presented itself everywhere. And then I had the pleasure of becoming good friends and meeting Dani Katz, who is a writer. And she was also on a very similar and parallel journey, and we started to build this practice together and eventually develop the workshop that you came to.
Right. So you co-presented Creating Reality Through Language with Danny Katz at Project Butterfly. And I was really interested, before the workshop even, I was interested in how you explore the concept of reality, or how do you invite a conversation about reality?
It's a tricky one. I believe that there's two philosophies on reality. One, which is essentialism, that there is one truth that exists. And the other one being that reality is perception-based. And in my experience, and what I know to be true is, for me, is what I perceive is my reality. And I also know that many people in the world don't perceive things the same way that I do, and that's their reality. And that's really the premise that we're working with when we say creating reality through language, is what is your experience of what is real?
Right. I remember reading in the event description, it included like language can construct our moment-to-moment experience. And that is so, it seemed like such a personal sort of interpretation of reality. And also the description that creating reality through language as shaping the limitless potential in the universe into form. And that really clicked with me in terms of also what you began the workshop with, drawing on the opening lines of Genesis.
Yeah, there's so much information here. In Genesis and John, it stated, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And then we're also told that we are made in the image of our Creator. So looking at that, not in a religious way, but seeing what the people before us have written and put out there and acquiring knowledge and wisdom from that, we're told basically that we are Word. And now quantum physics and science is getting into the concept of vibration. Word is sound. It's vibration. And we're really exploring the ideas in science now that everything ultimately is vibration. So that's God, Word. We are the Word. We are creators. And we have the ability to speak and put vibration and sound forth into the universe and therefore create with that tool. And that's the premise of this work, is to, yes, on a surface level, look at how we're using language to feel, but even deeper than that, realizing that language can construct a reality rather than reflect a reality, and that with the concepts in quantum physics that light exists in waveform, which is limitless potential, but also can exist in particle form, which is its finite existence, how do we actually, as human beings, what is the mechanism and the process that we take the limitless information and start breaking it down into a conceivable form that we experience through our external senses? And language plays a tremendous role in that process of taking that massive amount of information, selecting what we're actually going to perceive, and then defining it into our experience.
Right. And so you call it integrated language as a way to acknowledge our integrated or holistic beings. Can you elaborate on the modes of communication that this work touches on?
We're calling it integrated language because Danny and I, first and foremost, are inviting people to really identify with themselves on a holistic scale, that we are physical beings, we are mental beings, emotional beings, spiritual beings, and then there's that aspect of us that is beyond reason, that is not even comprehensible to the logical mind. And how are we able to use, and how can we choose to use language in a way that is identifying with, accessing, and using and expressing all aspects of our being? So not just speaking from a material plane, not just speaking from a mental or emotional plane, really recognizing all of those when we speak and empowering ourselves through all of those which we have use of to consciously be present in our life and consciously speak into existence that which we want to have in our world. And that becomes,
right,
that's also energetic communication, you know, not just using language and what we're speaking, but recognizing ourselves as energetic and non-physical beings and allowing ourselves to use other forms of communication as well.
Right. And so a big part of this work is identifying yourself the multiple levels of being through which you communicate. So that kind of leads me to my next question, which is, how do you think integrated language plays into this paradigm shift or transition that we're experiencing?
It plays in so many really exciting ways. It plays in wanting to embrace and choosing to embrace a language that uplifts ourselves and those that we are co-creating with, the partners in our projects that we are working and bringing to fruition. And it also plays into really recognizing the energetic charges behind what we're speaking, and understanding that as we're creating a new world, we ourselves are undergoing a change. This is Evolver, and that's recognizing that we are in the process of evolution. And evolving means interacting with our reality in a different world, and therefore, being able to make that happen, we ourselves are shifting into different forms of being. And that's also why we embrace the word integrated, because as we start to consciously integrate ourselves and identify with all these aspects, we actually become different forms of being, and the language and the ways that we communicate shift, because certain things become obsolete and the words then drop out for that, so there's no need to refer to them anymore. And other new concepts that may have not been perceived in the past come into existence, and we start to create new words for that. And I highly encourage people to do that, to play around with their words. Some of the basic things that you'll see, you know, some people are starting to play with now, overstanding instead of understanding. Little things like that, you know, where we see this energetic charge and placement in the words that we speak. How can we shift those to uplift ourselves, empower ourselves, and keep our energy really motivated from a center place going outwards instead of the other way around, which is very much the way our society is structured right now, is looking external and identifying ourselves from that and then drawing power from the external into the internal.
Right, that critical eye. It brings to mind, though, as far as like the physical aspect of our being, I loved that you pointed out that you actually can create new neural pathways by changing your language, and that there's actually a very clear relationship between the language that you speak and the way that you perceive.
Yes. We are constantly, and many people don't realize this, we're always changing, and we are constantly building new neural pathways, and also we're constantly affirming our old neural pathways. So choosing to speak to ourselves differently actually creates a physical shift in the body where our neural pathways will start to shift into a new way of being physically, and then we will actually start to experience different physical sensations in our body. One of the studies that I brought up in the workshop was talking about ERPs, which are event-related brain potentials. And these are sort of things that are going on in cognitive neuroscience. And they did a study where they had Greek-speaking people and English-speaking people. And the reason they used Greek was because in Greek there are many different words for the color blue. And some can be used to refer to pen, some can be only referred to the color of the sky, and they are not interchangeable. While in English, anyone will say blue. You can talk to blue ink, or you can talk about the blue sky, blue clothing. And what they did, the ERPs allows the scientists to track the activity of the brain about millisecond to millisecond. And we know that the visual system in our brain begins to process stimuli about 10 milliseconds after light has hit the retina of the eye. We also know that language begins to consciously invade our thinking about 200 milliseconds later. So in this study, it was Professor Theory, I believe, that did the study. They found that when 100 milliseconds into the recognition of the light in the retina, there were actual physical differences that were happening in the bodies of the Greek speakers and the English speakers. So that's where we start to see that the actual language that we use, even before we're consciously using the language, has physical differences on how we are perceiving light when it goes into our eye. And sight is a huge sense for most people on their perception of reality. I mean, we have the term seeing is believing.
Yeah.
You know, now we're science is showing that people who speak different languages are actually seeing different things.
That's so fascinating. And then the other example that you brought up about how our language kind of directs where our attention goes, even.
Yeah.
You had the example with the Cherokee parents and the English-speaking parents, again, where there was a clear relationship between the word used and the individual response and what is perceived.
Yeah, that was a study by the linguist Dan Alford, and it was Cheyenne parents. He had them sit with their children, and he would bounce a ball, and English-speaking parents say, okay, look at the ball. Cheyenne-speaking parents say, look at the bouncing. So we want to understand that our perception of reality is very much, and what we notice and don't notice is based on the instruction of our language and the way that our parents speak to us. When an English-speaking parent speaks to their child, they're saying, look at that object, whereas the Cheyenne parent saying, look at this verb, this action of bouncing. Totally different way of relating to the world. Are you relating to the world through the objects around you? Are you relating to the world through the actions around you, through the emotions around you? All of that is defined by the intention, the instructional intention of where to place your attention.
Yeah. Well, so building upon that, though, if someone's looking to bring integrated language into their life, can you touch on, like, what is the role of community in integrated language, in introducing integrated language into your being?
It's so embedded into everything that we do, language, and a great way to start playing with it is to have a friend join in with you and agree, come to an agreement that you are going to start. A term that Danny and I use is calling in, that you're going to, instead of calling out, where you're going to start calling each other in to more empowered ways of speaking to yourself and to each other. And really, it's an experiment, creating a new form of language because we are becoming new beings and finding the language to define the reality and the new community that we are creating together. So it's really about fun. It's about being easy on yourself, no judgment, allowing yourself to try things, see what feels good for you, see what doesn't feel good for you, and have people around you because the patterns are so ingrained. The first word that I started and chose to let go of was the word should. And it took me almost a year of my friend punching me in the shoulder every time he noticed me saying it to let it go. And I still use it occasionally.
Yeah.
I flipped out on him a few times. But I'm very grateful in the long run.
Yeah.
So we want to call each other in.
Hmm? Right, calling each other in as opposed to calling each other out. It's the calling in connotes this community space, like an empowered space, whereas calling out connotes, you know, isolation and shunning in a way that is not conducive to community building, in my experience, in my thought process. So I wanted to also touch on something that really stuck with me from the workshop, which is your insights into making commitments. Like, you know, what is the effect of making casual, half-hearted commitments?
Commitments. Well, Danny and I actually did do a workshop just on the language of commitment. One of the things that I touched on in that workshop was momentum of success versus momentum of failure. Mm. And speaking commitments to ourselves, a lot of this is actually done internally. An example is, I'm going to get up and go to the gym tomorrow. This is one that many of us are familiar with, and we don't actually get up and do it. Once we've said that to ourselves and we don't follow through, we are actually disconnecting ourselves energetically between our solar plexus, which deals with our willpower, and then we have our heart, which is right above that, and our throat, which is where we actually spoke the intention into existence. We want to align ourselves, and this is, again, going back to the concept of being integrated energetically so that we are empowered in everything that we do. So we're putting forth our life force to give life to the concepts that we are bringing into existence. And when we say something and we don't follow through, we actually create a schism in that alignment energetically. So So I encourage people to start at a place of neutrality, to actually look at how many commitments we're unconsciously making to ourselves, and to stop doing that for a little while. Allow yourself to come to a place of neutrality, and then slowly introduce very small, easily accomplished commitments so that you get the wheel turning from a momentum of failure into a momentum of success, and then it will quickly pick up and start moving forward, and then you can start introducing larger commitments into your daily routine.
So better aligning as opposed to creating that schism where, oh, my gosh, I'm so quick on the draw to say, oh, I'll call you back tomorrow. Or also I felt after taking your class, I was very aware of how quick I was to apologize, very aware of every if, but, maybe, possibly, et cetera. But so that brings me to, I guess we'll wrap it up, but that brings me to my last question, which is, can you give me some examples of integrated language or words that you would invite people to drop from their everyday language to draw into an empowered space?
I definitely will. I would first love to reference Danny's blog, my partner Danny Katz, her blog, which is Words Are Matter. It's words, the letter R, matter.blogspot.com. She has a great list of words for people to reference and go check out. We're inviting people to let go of words, for example, try. In Star Wars, Yoda says to Luke, there is no try, there is only do or do not. And the energy of try, it's a cop-out, and it holds us back because we're not committing, going back to the concept of committing to either or. One, we're not really being at peace with the fact that we may not be doing the thing that we're telling ourselves we are committing to doing, and masking it with the word try. And two, when we're saying try, we actually haven't done the thing that we want to do. So when you state into existence, I am doing this, you may fail, and that's okay, because really failure only actually exists if you completely give up. Maybe that one little time it didn't work out the way, then you can say, I'm doing this again, and you continue to move forward. You are stating, affirming into the universe that this is being accomplished. It may not be exactly the way, show up exactly the way that you want it to. The more that you keep saying that, the more that you're drawing that energy into your field and making it a reality.
And that's like the momentum of success.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
It's very wishy-washy. It's not really exerting your energy in either way. It's not exerting it into do. It's not exerting it into don't. There can come up. It sort of puts a stall on the flow of the energy. You know, if you're not going to do something, make that decision. The energy's cleared up and can go on to something else. And if you're going to do it, make that decision and do it.
Mm-hmm.
And let go of the fear of failure.
Another really powerful example for me was when you explained the word but, that, whatever came before the word but in the sentence is totally dismissed by the mind, and the energy is just sent off in these two different directions rather than being aligned throughout the sentence, such as, can you elaborate on the word but? I thought that was a really important one.
I invite people to replace but with and. Let me give you a really powerful example. Would be, I love you, but when you do this thing, that's a great example because it's such a powerful statement, I love you. And then you completely negate what you just said to point out the thing that you're not appreciating in the person at that time. As opposed to, I love you, and it doesn't really work for me when you don't do your dishes. And it doesn't feel good to me when you're not helping out in the kitchen. You're actually including the fact that you love this person into the statement and saying what it is that you want to express without actually creating a block. It basically creates like a cross energetically where and would be a plus sign, and adding the two concepts together, the but nullifies the first one and puts all the emphasis on the second one. So it's almost as if there was no point in saying the first thing that you said in the first place.
Yeah, so it's about putting your energy, your language, and intention into what is working and furthering that for yourself. That's what I
thought. It is. It's about being, a lot of this is about being in integrity. The more that your energy and your actions follow your word, the more powerful your word becomes. And we start to talk about going back to Genesis and this concept of speaking into existence. That happens when your power is behind your word and you're in complete integrity on all aspects of your being. That's when you have the ability to speak. And I'm sure that many of the people listening on this have had small experiences. We've had experiences, psychic experience, where we think about someone and we say, hey, I'd love to talk to so-and-so, and then the phone rings. That's a moment that we've experienced where we are in integrity and everything's lined up, and it actually happens the second that we say it. We've all had little glimpses of that. The art form now is to really come, as we're becoming more and more conscious beings and we're evolving into a new state of relating to our reality, harnessing language in that process, because it's such a huge part of that process. Language is the interface between the immaterial aspect of our being and the material aspect of our being. It's the software that we're programmed with. So those of us who are here on Evolver, listening to this stuff and choosing to show up more consciously, let's empower ourselves with one of the biggest tools that we have. You know, politicians and advertisers are using this stuff all the time to coerce us to feeling a certain way and to experience reality in a different way. Let's take this tool and use it to our advantage to build our community and to uplift each other, to feel good, to use language that encourages and feels good, to let go of the doubt. The English, American English language is filled with doubt. I mean, I guess, I think so, maybe, I don't know. Don't quote me on this. These little colloquialisms that show up all over the place. It's really pertinent right now that we are all completely sure that we are creating a sustainable, affirmative, loving community that enables the world and Earth and humans to live in a symbiotic relationship that nourishes all.
That's why I felt this was so relevant to the Evolver community and really anybody bringing about a better world.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks so much for sharing. Before we go, though, I'd love to share, how can we find your work and keep up with Creating Reality Through Language workshops?
Danny's blog, which I spoke about, is a great place, wordsarematter.blogspot.com. My website is bodyintention.com. You can also go check out my Facebook page and like me there, and you'll be updated on any of the events and workshops that Danny and I are teaching. I also do some other classes specifically on energy and alignment, emotional release, those types of things. And all my contact information is there. I invite anyone who's interested and wants to learn more about this to get in touch with me, and we can build together.
Yeah,
I was actually noticing when I was on, I went to your to Evolver, that you guys have the Hopi Elder quote up there, to let go of struggle.
Banish struggle from your vocabulary.
Yeah.
Also, Evolver has adopted not be the change you wish to see in the world. I know, I understand that so much better now. What is it? I'm forgetting.
Well, the quote that you guys have up there is, banish the word struggle from your attitude and your vocabulary. All that we do now must be done in sacred manner and in celebration. We are the ones we have been waiting for. That's a beautiful quote. And then Danny and I, go through a very in-depth description of Gandhi's Be the Change in the World. Let me break that down for you guys really quickly, because Danny does that way better than me. Here we go. So he says, be the change you wish to see in the world. We say, be the change you are seeing in the world. And even more powerfully, choose to say, I am the change I am seeing in the world. So you are stating in the present tense, fully harnessing your energy in present tense, but super powerful with your language. Notice energetically, where are you sending your attention when you speak? Keep it harnessed in the present tense. I encourage people really to let go of the past and speak only that which you want to see in the future. Let go of the doubt. Let go of the fear. Once we stop using words to affirm the energy and existence of the things we no longer want to experience, they will dissipate. You will not perceive them anymore. You perceive things because you speak them into existence, and because you have that word, you notice it. There's always the example of Columbus and coming in on his ships, and the indigenous people, it took their shaman went and meditated for 3 days because the people saw the ripples on the water, but they were incapable of seeing the ships because they had no concept of a ship of that size.
Yeah.
And there was no vocabulary to actually perceive it.
Yeah, that was amazing, too, when you pointed out that if we perceived everything, or if we took in all information, that we would not be able to perceive difference and duality. And so that, you know, creating reality is somewhat like an editing process, that and that language is the software and the brain is the central processing server. And that whole software metaphor really made sense to me. It just how neat it is, that how also it takes the word programmed, like from early on.
It's how we categorize that limitless information, which would be completely overwhelming. If we had that much information coming in, we wouldn't actually have human consciousness. It would be a totally different form of consciousness. And for those of us who have taken psychedelic medicines and have experienced other forms of consciousness where there isn't language, to the point where they can't even speak in the English language anymore, or whatever language is their indigenous language, it's a different form of consciousness. So the consciousness that we have, that we are calling human consciousness, is programmed a very specific way to take information in, to categorize it, and to experience it. And that is what language does, and define it. The word categorization and defining. I know we were speaking before, and I was giving, you know, the example also of what we say, you know, like it, living in L.A. and it being a beautiful day outside, and how people can say, oh, you know, great, wonderful, it's another sunny day in California, or do you choose to say, like, I really celebrate this day, it's a beautiful day. You know, it's the exact same experience, totally different interpretation of what's going on in your reality, based on the way that you're using your words. And
right,
energetically.
Yeah, the emotional attachment to the words. I thought that was really incredible. Well, thank you so much for sharing. And so it's wordsarematter.blogspot.com. It's your partner Danny Katz's blog, where she has an incredible list of words that she would invite you to eliminate from your vocabulary as part of bringing integrated language into your life. And your Natagera's website, bodyintention.com,
mm-hmm.
where you can find all your contact info and possibly find future Creating Reality Through Language workshops.
Yes.
Thanks so much, Natagera, for your time and attention and insights. It's really wonderful talking to you.
It was really wonderful being here. Thank you for giving me an opportunity to share this information with everyone.
All right, thanks. Talk to you again soon.
You too. Have a great day.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, so that was our final interview on this episode of Evolver, the podcast. I'm really happy to be back doing this. I missed doing it for so long. We have a couple of sponsors that I want to mention for this episode. The Ayahuasca Visions of Pablo Amaringo, Inner Traditions' new collection of never-before-published paintings by renowned artist Pablo Amaringo, with written contributions by Graham Hancock, Jeremy Narby, Robert Venosa, Dennis McKenna, Stefan Bayer, and Jan Koonin. Also, there's the Sacred Music Ritual coming up from July 21st to the July 31st. Come together for a shamanic journey with the taste of the Amazonian rainforest at Pachamama, a waterfall of music that embodies prayer, meditation, and celebration. The songs are a call for healing and awakening of the spirit. The Cura is an intensive 3-night experience of fully immersing ourselves into the magic of this ritual with trust, love, and totality. You can find out more information about that at www.pachamama.com, sacredmusicritual.asp. And then, of course, we want to thank the Evolver Social Movement, because without that, just this podcast wouldn't be around, the B-Note wouldn't be around, the Gift Circles, Time Bank, all that stuff, all the amazing things that are happening, Charles Eisenstein's book, Sacred Economics, none of that stuff would be coming out or being produced had it not had we not been given the opportunity by the Evolver social movement. We really just, really, our hearts go out to you guys, and it's awesome that you came through like that. And if anybody else would like to join and help us keep expanding into more of these kind of things that are just building momentum every day, that's awesome too. You can go and you can find information about that on realitysandwich.com and evolver.net as well. I guess in closing, I would just like to say that I'm now going to be receiving a lot of help doing this podcast, so my insanely busy life will actually be able to hold up my end of the work on this podcast and be able to come out more regularly once again. So I'm really excited about that. I know I've actually gotten some emails from people asking about it, and we're going to be coming back hopefully more regularly, and we're already working on our next show. So I look forward to getting that out as soon as possible to you guys, and thanks again for listening to Evolver the podcast, and I look forward to next time. And remember, it's our world to change.
In a cubicle, as Plato once suggested, they would only know the cubicle and not the world outside it. And they wouldn't view the cubicle as something geometric. We only know it's a cubicle because we live outside. Now the one inside the cubicle can't comprehend its measurements, because measurements are models made of foreign by observers relative to their position on the outside of the cubicle to understand objectively so they can study further. If I grew up in a cubicle, the walls limit my universe. I have no knowledge of the entirety like the outsiders do. If you follow what I say and can swallow the powdered water, close your eyes and open your mind, this one's for you. The brain equals a cubicle, we'll never think outside it. I decide it, why to try to tie a diagram and modify it. I'm a man, it's a hybrid of a body, a pirate of a soul that can fly without control. Realize the brain takes in 6 billion signals per second, most of which are hidden and not given to the senses. We're living to a few futile primitive tools of perception, living in a universal pool of first-hand deception. The mind's job is to receive the signals and block out the ones that don't coincide with imprinted symbols. That way the information you obtain is recognized. Reality is thinkable, incomparable to space and time. It makes a map of the territory that gives us the topic of the Copenhagen interpretation of modern quantum physics. We state we don't know the meal, we only know the menu that our brain tells us is real. We don't know the rules of our heads. From inside these cubicles we can't see the chance. No one really knows exactly what happens when we think. Therefore we can never really ever know anything.
This is the consciousness revolution. You got the right to think, don't think about it, just do it. This is the consciousness revolution. You got the right to think, don't think about it, just do it. This is the consciousness revolution. You got the right to think, don't think about it, just do it. This is the consciousness revolution. You got the right to think, don't think about it, just do it. This is the consciousness revolution. You got the right to think, don't think about it, just do it. This is the consciousness revolution. You got the right to think, don't think about it, just do it. This is the consciousness revolution.